This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
If your job is to help combat the COVID crisis, there's no doubt that you will put your communication and leadership skills to the test every single day. And today's guest does just that. Ryan, who are we speaking with today?
Today's guest is distinguished Toastmaster and past international director, Michael Osier. Michael has been on the front edge of California's public health response to the pandemic, specifically in Riverside County, where he serves as assistant director and chief health strategist of the Riverside County Department of Public Health. A Toastmaster for 13 years, Michael currently belongs to five clubs and served on Toastmasters International's board of directors from 2016 to 2018. Michael is featured in a May 2021 online exclusive article at toastmasters.org/magazine. Distinguished Toastmaster, Michael Osier, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you, Ryan and Greg. It's a pleasure to be here with you. You guys are on my bucket list. I'm so excited to do this. This was on my bucket list.
Oh.
Michael, not that anything these days is typical, but I'm just curious, what are you expecting your day to look like right now?
But today already started. We always started, as we say in military time, 0800. And we have a briefing for all the points of distribution of the vaccine in the county. And it's about 50 to 100 people that are just on that morning call. We set the stage for the day. What's going to happen, what vaccine different locations will have, any challenges we face, and then an inspiration message. We have a quote of the day. I do it about half the time and give everyone an opportunity to set the tone for the day. Once that's over, we take the operations group with the leadership group, and we spend about an hour. What do we have to work on? What's the public information issues? What's the challenges today? What are we working on the rest of the week? And then at 10 o'clock, we meet with all the cities in the county online, of course, and talk about what their challenges are. This is my day. Once that's over, 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock, we have the command and general information meeting with all the leaders. There's about 20 of us that figure out what we're going to do, what the strategy is going to be for the next day and the next week. And then we wrap it all up at 3 o'clock with our plans meeting. In between, you can just imagine, there's always something going on. We're doing in the county about 18,000 vaccines every day. And we're trying to get 2.5 million people vaccinated in the next 2 to 3 months. It's a daunting task, if you can imagine.
All I can say is OMG. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, Michael, I mean, obviously coronavirus and managing the impacts of the pandemic is front and center right now. But is your team still working on wider issues of public health in the midst of all of this? Or is it like everything's focused on vaccines and pandemic?
Well, if you can imagine, in our county, we're the size of a state like New Jersey, 7,000 square miles. I don't know what that is in meters, but it's 200 miles from one end of the county to the other and 2.5 million people here. The whole health department before COVID was about 650 people. We've more than doubled the number of people on our team just through the COVID response, through case investigation and contact tracing. And now we have 600 people just working on the vaccine operations. So public health still has to continue. We still have to get kids immunized. We still have to go to people's homes to make sure that the kids are healthy and the families are healthy. We still have to do injury prevention, get hundreds of car seats out, make sure that families are eating right through our WIC nutrition program. The public health still has to continue, albeit not at the same level, but we still have 2.5 million people to keep healthy separate from COVID, if you can imagine. And if you told me we could double the size of a department in just a few months, I would say that's a 10-year project. We did it in just a few months. It's mind-boggling. And you couldn't do it if you thought about doing it. You just do it.
Wow. Michael, as you described your day earlier and what you just said, I'm thinking when we're talking about Toastmasters, I'm thinking about communication skills and leadership skills just totally going out on overload. Can you think of maybe one particular key communication or leadership skill that might stand out for you most right now?
I call it the table topics method. We have to talk in sound bites. You have dozens and dozens of people on a Teams call or a Zoom call. You basically have 2 to 3 minutes to get your message out for the whole day. Nobody's going to listen to 15 minutes or even a 7-minute talk. It's 1 to 2 minutes, and you have to set the stage, explain what's going on, and then give them a motivational tidbit so that the day can continue. And you have really 1 to 2 minutes to do that. And that's every day. And that's 2 or 3 times during the day, depending on who you're speaking with. So, hey, I'm a huge fan of table topics, and that's what I practice most. If I do a second one, of course, it's leadership, because can you imagine? Yes, we have teams of people, but there's 500 or 600 people working on this project. How do you get that message out? And everyone thinks they know how to do it better than everyone else. And as part of the incident command structure, we have to make those final decisions, but you also have to listen. So everything around Toastmasters, listening, evaluating, what's the best way to go, making sure everyone feels like they're heard, and then getting a decision to be, we call it socialized, getting the decision socialized so that everyone will work on it. Because just like Toastmasters, trying to tell hundreds of people what to do doesn't really work if they don't want to do it. So to convince them it's the right thing to do at every level, it's every bit of Toastmasters is what I use every single day.
In the article, it says that you're a significant source for journalists, having been quoted in newspapers and interviews. And I know just recently you'd mentioned about being on NPR radio. It sounds like Toastmasters was certainly a conduit to help get you there, wasn't it?
Oh, Toastmasters is the key. The local stations, I've been now in the major stations in the city of Los Angeles, but also in Palm Springs, they have their own separate media market. And they seem to want to talk to me every week or so in whatever the topic is of the day. And they always say to me, Michael, you talk in sound bites. We can use this. We can use that. They never have to do a second take. I also learned from table topics. When they ask a question that might not be right, in fact, I did this with the anchor on one of the stations in Palm Springs just on Friday. And I had to say, on the contrary, Peter, we really see it this way. He loved it. He didn't fight back. They were trying to go in one direction. But our message was, hey, everyone needs to get vaccinated. Everyone needs to get their second dose. And we can make a difference if more people get vaccinated in the safety and health of the community. And I was able to totally turn that conversation around on TV to get the right public health message out there. And if Toastmasters is the key, and that skill I've learned after 13 years in the organization to make that happen. I had 2 interviews yesterday. I had the one Friday. I have 1 planned for later this week on TV. And you know, that TV, they speak in 10 and 20 second increments. That's what they want.
Interestingly, I just watched this morning that interview where you said, on the contrary, Peter. That really stood out to me.
I want to say also that one thing we learn in Toastmasters is sometimes you'll take a risk. As Dr. Smedley said, you reveal yourself when you speak. And it's not for the faint of heart to say on TV, on the contrary, Mr. Anchor, we really see it this way. And so it's not for the faint of heart. And you also can't be combative, but you also have to be reasonable. And getting the message out, our message is, of course, the catchphrase I invented 2 weeks ago, everyone deserves a shot. The idea here is we have to do everything we can to make sure people get vaccinated. I find that the media is loving that line, even though I just made it up on the spot on a call 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Well, I think if everybody agreed all the time about absolutely everything, I don't think we would really have much change in the world.
The video that I watched with you, and in fact, I think it was the On the Contrary video, what I also noticed there, and I can sense it here as well in our conversation, you were smiling a lot, and not in a silly, goofy way, but it just, you were like bringing joy to that conversation with the anchor. Gosh, I mean, I do not envy your job and can imagine all the stress and everything you're under, but I just love that you're bringing that positivity.
Well, I love that you said that, because some of the people here said, why do you always smile? I go, well, first off, in Toastmasters, we learned to smile, but it wasn't a goofy smile. I was having the time of my life, right? I love that we could actually have that couple minute conversation with that anchor. And I think he appreciated that. But the camera's on. I was in my element. He was loving his stuff. I think everyone sensed that, right? If you were watching it, you sensed that these were two people getting a message out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And it's reassuring, too. Maybe this guy's not falling. If this guy's in charge of public health and he's telling us it's okay or what to do. Maybe we should listen.
I really appreciate that you noticed that, because I'm afraid some people miss that. That was me. There's no, I can't play a role on, I've been interviewed too many times. I can't play a role. I have to be myself.
Yeah.
Keeping on the theme of Toastmasters, it's obvious that you certainly embrace the Toastmasters experience. Going back, you've been a Toastmaster for 13 years. What was the motivation to get you to join?
I love this story. Thank you for asking that question. Our training department in public health realized that many of our employees had all the skills they needed to promote, but they were flubbing the interviews. So our education group had reached out to Toastmasters and asked them to come and present what Toastmasters could do for some of our future leaders. I missed the meeting. Then they came out a second time to do a demo or a launch meeting. I missed the meeting. But because I was the senior person as part of this project, I showed up to the first meeting and was immediately elected president. And it was halfway through the second meeting that I realized this is something different than we've ever done. The whole idea of prepared speeches and the evaluation and table topics really changed my view. And the third week, when I had to give a talk and the person assigned to evaluate me was someone who worked for me, a direct report, as we say, that in Toastmasters, that he could give an evaluation of my speech, and it was okay, even though I was higher up in the organization than him, I totally understood that this Toastmasters world is very different than anything I had ever experienced in my career. And I was hooked from then on, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So now, Michael, being in the position you're in and applying that Toastmasters experience to your work, as you're doing, whether it be interviews or press conferences or staff meetings, can you give us some insight into what does your process of preparation of your message look like so that your audience can receive from you what they expect, which is, as the article says, a message that's direct, succinct, and crystal clear? How do you go about getting that together so that when the microphone lights up, that's what people are going to hear on the other end?
One thing I've learned is it's not just one person. I'm representing really all of Riverside County. This is the message going out. So we have really good public information officers who are well-versed in this. And we'll sit down with them and the other leadership, people in the leadership, and say, what's our message today? It isn't just Michael talking about what he thinks. It's what's our message that we need 2.5 million people to hear. Yesterday, the message was about how do we encourage people to get their second dose? Because we have about 5.5% of the people are not showing up for their second dose. Last week, the message was the Centers for Disease Control changed the rules about when you have to wear a mask. So why is that important? What's the health and safety message there? We talk through it. We don't write it out. I never write that out. But we also have to make sure, what's our underlying message? Just like when you give a 5 to 7 minute speech, what's the recurring theme? Is it finding your why? Is it how do you say yes to the opportunities in Toastmasters? Or as in vaccine world, how do we get people to get vaccinated? What's the issue that's keeping people from that? What's the newest message about the vaccine? Is this vaccine safe or not? So making sure that that underlying message comes through, even in a 20-second soundbite, that the whole message is there all the time and you keep coming back to that, and that you speak short, concise statements. And we also talk about, what do you do when you get thrown that curve? Do you answer that question, or do you do what we do in Toastmasters and bridge to what you need to talk about? Not that I spend hours preparing, because I don't have time for that. But those conversations about what is the message we want to get out today or this week, and making sure we do that.
Michael, I'm thinking that when you're speaking with your teams, obviously it's not like NPR radio, and you may not necessarily talk in little sound bites. I'm curious as to what's your process like for your teams? Because obviously you need to do a little bit more prep for that and making sure that the message is clear and it's understood, et cetera, et cetera.
What I love about Toastmasters, and I probably came to this as a lifelong learner, and as any kind of leadership position, I'm far from perfect. I make mistakes every day that I say I knew better. We want to have open communication, and we don't always agree. Do we open a site here? Do we open a site there? What kind of advertising program? Who has to work overtime? Who's going to work the weekends? Who's going to do the next piece of getting that vaccine out? Do we hire more people? Do we spend less money? Do we spend more money? The skill I believe I bring, and modesty is not my best trait these days, is I can disagree with people. We can argue. I'm not saying we raise voices, but it has nothing to do with the relationship. I'm not mad at the person because we disagree. That's not even an issue for me. I thrive on that kind of where you get people to disagree and you find some way of working together. I don't care if people are mad at me for a day. I'm not mad at them. It's okay. I can't let whatever that happened continue. Put it behind you, move on, and we're still buddies. And I think that's part of it, is the ability to completely disagree with the approach, but not have it affect the relationships and not affect the organization. I don't know how that happens. I think we learned that in Toastmasters. We learned that in real life. I still sometimes talk more than I should when I should listen more. And I have to catch myself almost every day. Hey, even in this position, I have to take guidance from many people in the organization.
Given all the stress that everyone is under and the, let's face it, probably often feels like impossible tasks or KPIs that you're responsible for, key performance indicators, what happens in those cases when maybe emotions do get the best of you and maybe you come in a little too hot with a colleague? How do you handle those cases?
Well, about 2 weeks ago, I'm going to tell you this story. I can't believe I'm going to share this with everybody. I had an issue that I thought was important. So I brought it to the leadership team and they go, oh, that's nice. And then they went on to the next topic. And I said, wait a minute. And I hit my fist on the table. You guys are not listening. I can't believe it. I shared something really important and now you're just blowing me off. How dare you? And they just looked at me and they go, oh, we've been waiting for this conversation, Michael. Good. Now you're like the rest of us. Very good. Okay. You've blown your top. Now we're good. Okay. And isn't it great that I can work with a team of people that tolerate my outbursts like that? And we have to let people express those frustrations. Mm. I can't always be the nice guy. I'm hardly ever the nice guy, but they know I care and I'm passionate.
Yeah.
In the article, you made reference to a situation where the message didn't come across as it should, and you had to sort of circle back. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So one of the deputy chiefs for the operations, I had given him a really hard time about something, and I wasn't giving him the approval for what he wanted to do, getting the vaccine out in certain locations, and we disagreed on the approach. I could tell he was really annoyed with me. We'll call him Brian. His name's Brian. And it was leaving a bad taste with me. So I went back the next day and I said, Brian, I'm really sorry. I hope we're good. And he goes, oh, Osher, we're good. That means that's just water under the bridge. That was yesterday, not today. But I felt like I really had to reach out to him to say that because it was costing me sleep. It wasn't costing him any sleep. And I hope in the reverse, we would have that. I like that we can disagree on a lot of things, but we still are getting, as we say, we're still getting shots in arms. Even if we disagree on the approach, which is great because we see the world completely different. And I did apologize to him, but it had no effect on our relationship. We're still brothers. How's that?
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. That's the last thing you want to do is you want to have something that is just brewing or stewing that doesn't actually get resolved, especially when you're on the front lines of a situation that could be critical to the world.
Many of us have been doing this now for 14 or 15 months with very little break in this. And it's starting to show. We're like anything, there's stress, there's cracks, and we have to really cut each other some slack here. And I think that's very important. I wish I could say we have work-life balance, but we don't. But we strive for it. We try to give people days off here and there. It mostly doesn't work because there's so much going on. I think the way we do it is be tolerant. And if people need an afternoon off or one day off, we can do that.
Long before COVID-19 reached California, the topic of leading and managing in times of change has been a really hot topic in management literature. You know, you're on the front edge of it right now, but in your position and the position that your colleagues are in, with new research, new data becoming available every day, we've seen several shifts in predictions and best practices. So my question is, what advice do you have on how to maintain trust and credibility when we're dealing with a lot of unknowns and with shifting best practices and information?
I think the best way is to be upfront about it. If you recall, a year ago, March 2020, we said, don't wear masks. there's nothing to do. Only wear masks if you're sick. And then the studies came out and said, no, masks stop the disease. So I had to say, we were wrong. We thought that masks didn't make a difference. We now see that they make a difference. And as this disease progresses, we're going to learn better and better what works and what doesn't work. Now, some people get mad. You can't make up your mind. How come you guys keep changing it? We're saying, we've never had this virus, or it's been since 1918. We haven't had a situation like this, a pandemic as big as this. And we have to say, we learn something new every day. Luckily for in public health, we have a team of epidemiologists who scour the literature and help us discuss and decide what the best practices are. And then how do we work those into the conversations? I'm saying all the time, we thought this worked, but we were wrong. Now we know that this works. Whatever it is, whether it was masking, whether it was 6 foot distance or 3 foot distance, whether it was you could eat outside or eat inside. I think people need to see that it's the practice of science. It's not always science, and the answers are not always clear. And I actually say this on many of my interviews. They always say, well, what's going to happen? And I say, every prediction I made about COVID has turned out not quite to be right because the world has changed. So we constantly have to look at rethinking what we believe.
Michael, as our time comes to a close, I want to thank you very much for sharing your experiences. And it still amazes me how, given what you deal with on a day-to-day basis, that you're still finding the time to embrace the Toastmasters experience, improve your communication, your leadership skills, go out there and do interviews and talk to people and share the word, trying to make sure that we keep our world healthy. I just want to thank you very much for that. If anyone was interested in connecting with you, or perhaps maybe they want to talk to you or interview you for a TV show or a radio show, or just learn a few things from you, what's the best way that people can get a hold of you?
In the Toastmasters world, I have a Toastmasters email address, mosur@toastmasters.org. And my phone number internationally, +1-951-313-6313. And remember, we didn't join Toastmasters to be better Toastmasters. We joined Toastmasters so that we could learn to express ourselves better and help others do the same and make a positive difference in our communities. And thank you very much, Ryan and Greg. I really appreciate it. I mean, having a real conversation like this, not that different than talking to Ari Shapiro, really.
Say more, Michael, say more.
He goes, Michael, we got the magic of radio here. The magic of radio, you have the magic of podcast.
Michael Osier, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Michael.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.